Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at EnlightenRadio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasha Okowski.
Today is Monday, November 6th, and our theme today is gratitude and thanksgiving. How are you, Stash?
I'm doing fine. A good weekend. Had a lovely phone call on Saturday from my grandson thanking me for thanking me and Terry. Terry went online and ordered him a T-shirt celebrating Messi, the great soccer player, and who has won the 8th Golden Balloon and Golden Soccer Ball trophy as the best player in the world. This is his 8th award, the second most anybody's ever won is 5 by Cristiano Ronaldo. And after that, I think the next most is 3. And Cristiano is getting older, so he's not going to catch up to Messi because he's older than Messi. And Messi's going strong at 36. Anyway, it was a really nice thing for John, who's 11, to pick up the phone and call his grandfather and say, "Thanks, Judge. I got that shirt, and it's, I really like it." So,
what a good guy.
Well, he is a good little guy, and he's becoming a good soccer player. I hope I live long enough to see him play in high school or college. that would be a trip, boy. I would certainly love that.
Let me talk about another good guy. I want to thank Andy Alfred Irwin for opening our show this morning,
right?
Tarry Here, his original composition.
You bet, that's wonderful. I love hearing it.
I think Andy is telling this weekend at the Allegheny Highlands Storytelling Festival in Virginia.
He's a busy guy. I think he tells every weekend unless he's producing a show. Sometimes he's in a theatrical presentation, and so he's not on stage storytelling, but he's on stage either acting or else he's directing. And he does that at least once a year. He does.
And just recently, he's with two of our other friends. He's with Beth Olson and Jane Dorfman this week.
I'll be done. And just a week or two ago, he was with Adam Booth.
Yep, that's right. And Adam Booth is going to be at Stories in the Round on November 27th. So I want to.
You bet.
Do a shout out for that, and people can get tickets by calling me at 301-730-1638 or email fenitsky@hotmail.com.
That's great. And
you should tell us about Speak.
A week from tomorrow, Bill Harley, November 14th at Reynolds Hall. And boy, I'm so happy I figured out how to remember that name. And also November 15th, both dates at 7:30, but he will be on November 15th. He will be at the community center, a community club, right down the street from Reynolds Hall. And Bill Harley, great entertainer, musician, tells wonderful stories. And a variety of stories. Lots of times he tells stories about young people and singing and getting into trouble. Not singing and getting into trouble, but young people getting into trouble. And he often has a song that goes with it or a couple of them.
He did get in a lot of trouble as a young person himself.
Yeah, great stories. Yeah. I often wonder how many of those stories are about him, or does he just collect them from his buddies? Because it sounds like I heard him tell years ago, and it just seemed like I had a thought that he was talking about my friends. typical teenage boys.
Well, you should tell those stories.
Oh yeah, well,
we should have a radio show on bad boys get in trouble or something like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, and our troubles weren't terrible. We didn't destroy things or stuff like that, but sometimes we got in trouble by accidentally doing something.
Well, that's your story anyway.
That's right. Yeah. You know, who knows whether Russell really meant to throw that brick through the window. So, you know, it might have been just a bad throw.
Well, I think we should get started.
All right.
What's happening? Do you have a story you would like to tell?
I think I do. And we've been on the air for now for 3.5 minutes, I think.
I have five.
Five. Okay, five. Let's call it five. I'll trust your numbers all the time. Okay. So, well, yes. And so I'm going to talk about my first story is about Mr. Henry Rosso. Henry Rosso was the man who taught me how to play the accordion. And my brother Tony started taking drum lessons from Mr. Rosso, who came to the house. And my mother thought, since he was driving all the way from Curtis Bay to our house in Baltimore, that I should get involved in it. That way he could have two kids to teach. And then we also got my friend Bob Bouse involved. And so Mr. Rosso wound up teaching my brother Tony about the drums and Bob Bouse about the trumpet and me about the accordion. And he was a really nice man. And the reason I'm grateful to him is because he taught me how to play the accordion. I don't think I was a very good student. I practiced it, but I don't think I practiced as hard as some people who took lessons, because I never became a great accordionist. I did learn to play well enough that I could be entertaining with it. Certainly, I entertained my mother a lot. And then, even as a teenager, I had a small performing group. I had a group of four of us. It was myself on the accordion, Billy on the trumpet, Bobby on the trumpet, and Salvatore Dana on the drums. And I have to say that the biggest success we had was because of Salvatore. Dana was one of those great drummers. And back in the 50s, if you went to anything where there was a small group playing, the drummer was always the featured guy. My brother was a drummer, and he played in a small group, and he was the featured guy. He was just outrageous on the drums. And it seemed like at least once during a 2-hour dance or 3-hour dance, the drummer would have a 10-minute solo and just go crazy. And that was all because of the influence of some of the great drummers of the day. But Mr. Rosso was a great influence to me because he was just incredible the way he treated young people. He not only gave music lessons, he owned a music store and sold musical instruments, but he also had the Curtis Bay Band, which he created and which he was in charge of. And so I was in the Curtis Bay Band for about 4 years. I think from 13 to 16, maybe even till 17. But not as a senior in high school. As a senior in high school, I was not in a band, not the Curtis Bay Band. I was in a high school band. But anyway, so Mr. Rosso did incredible things with the band. Not only was he a good teacher and a man who provided the band to do things, we marched in a lot of fire department parades during the summer. And he did special things for the kids in the band, especially at Christmas time. At Christmas time, he would have a big party for all the band members and their parents and their siblings. I remember going to that party a number of times. And at one of those things, Lydia went with us, my mom and dad and my niece, Lydia. And she was a charmer. Mr. Rosso liked her as a little kid. And he put her up on stage and had her sing a couple songs. And she was a, boy, she was a good performer. She was a show off as a kid. And she was a good performer. And but Mr. Rosso, at that Christmas party every year, he would give out prizes, especially to those of us who were in the band and who never missed a band practice or performance. And I remember one guy in the band, a little guy who played the trumpet, and it was a very good trumpet player. And his trumpet looked like he had inherited from somebody who carried it through World War I, World War II, a number of other conflicts, and maybe even had somebody had used it back in the Civil War, because it was not a pretty instrument. It sounded great, but it was looked beat up and had dents and stuff. But at this particular Christmas gathering and party where we had fun and games and everything, Mr. Rosso would give out presents. And the trumpet player, whose name I have forgotten, of course, that was 60 years ago, so it was almost 70. It's okay if I don't remember everybody's name. Mr. Rosso gave that young man a brand new, beautiful trumpet. One of the best. You know, not just an ordinary, not just a regular trumpet, but one of the best brands. And gave that, and I remember the kid cried like crazy with gratitude, you know, and I know his mom was very happy. I don't remember whether his dad was even in the picture, but I know his mom worked hard and had to pay for his music lessons and things, and that trumpet, I'm sure, is probably still being used. At that same Christmas, I got a portable radio, a radio in a leather case with a strap and everything, and it was a green plastic, and it was wonderful. I had that for a number of years. When I went in the Army, unfortunately, something happened to it. Somebody used it and it got damaged, but while I was in high school, as I finished high school, and for a couple of years when I was in the Army, when I came home on my first leave, I remember having it. But when I came home from Germany in 1962, the radio wasn't working. And I suspect that my sister-in-law, who threw away some things of mine and got rid of some things, I suspect she was using a radio and broke it. She and I had an interesting relationship. I was not grateful to her for lots of reasons. One was she was my first girlfriend I had a crush on in eighth grade. We held hands in the bus on the way to Washington, D.C. for the eighth grade trip. And then 3 weeks later, she was dating my brother. So, and then she married him. So she and I never kind of hit it off again after eighth grade. Anyway, Mr. Rosso was a great influence because of his generosity and his teaching and his kindness to children. I can't remember the other presents he gave out, but he did give out awards to 8 people that were in the band who went to every practice and every parade that year. And I think that was an interesting thing because that impressed me that if you're involved in something, you should do it. 100%. Don't get involved on a team if you're not going to go to every game. Don't get involved in a group if you're not going to attend all the meetings, stuff like that. And I think that has stood as a good lesson. Besides that, he was a really nice man. And so I was always very grateful for Mr. Rosso. Thank you, Henry Rosso. I know he has passed on. And my parents really liked him and his wife. And sometimes we would visit Mr. Rosso, and it did not include music lessons. It was just my parents got along with him and his wife so well, and that was wonderful.
Wow.
And I was very grateful.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about Mr. Rosso before. That's a, yeah. That's a really good story.
And I still have my accordion.
Yeah.
Which was bought for me when I was 11. So that accordion now is 71 years old. Still play it once in a while. I haven't touched it for a long time because of my shoulder replacement. So I can't make it go in and out, you know, and with the bellows. However, right on that accordion is his name, Rosso, you know, in silver letters. So it's very nice. In those days, some music teachers or music stores would make. I don't know what brand the accordion was originally, but I think they would buy a certain brand and then they would put their own name on it. So I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it was legal, or maybe it wasn't legal and they just got away with it. I don't know. But I've always been very happy that that name was still on accordion, and it still sounds really good.
You know? Have you put the accordion in your will? Is it headed for an important person?
I think about that a lot. I had a small red accordion that I bought once when Terry was playing a gig in Hagerstown, actually. And I was just killing time while Terry was playing, and I was walking around the block, and I saw this store, and out in front of the store they had a small accordion on a table, and I went in and I said to the lady, "Can I try the accordion?" And she said, "Oh yeah, just pick it up," and I picked it up and it played beautifully. It was a 12, just a small accordion, you know, like a 12 bass. Keys on the left, and whereas mine has 120 basses on the left. So anyway, I had that for a number of years, and then I gave that to my grandchild, John, and I have a wonderful picture, and I think we even have a little video that we made of John and I sitting next to each other playing accordions, and John was pumping away at it and making noise on the keys. It was a wonderful memory because he was a little guy at the time. I think he was probably about 4 years old, maybe three or four.
Does he still play?
I don't know. He has drums and he does all kinds of things. I don't know if I should ask him. The next time we see him, I'll ask him if he's picked up the accordion recently. I didn't give him any lessons. You know, I showed him how to use it and everything, but I didn't want to try to teach him anything. Because, you know, he was so small. I probably should have tried, but I didn't want to, you know. With a little kid, you don't want to force him unless he asks you. So, anyway.
I want to do a little station break here. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stosh Zielkowski. And now Fanny's going to tell us a story.
Well, I am. But first I want to say that it's Monday, November 6th, 2023, and our theme today is gratitude and thanksgiving. So,
wonderful.
Are you ready for a story?
Yes, I am.
Okay, this is a story from the Iroquois, the Haudenosaunee, the people of the Longhouse. And every single summer when I was a child, my family visited Salamanca, New York, and one of the attractions there was the Museum of the Seneca. So I know a little bit about the Seneca people and their history, because I visited, and it was always very exciting to me to visit one of the five tribes of the Iroquois Nation. Once upon a time, a long, long, long ago, when the people were just learning how to feed their children, there were three sisters who lived together in a field where the sun shone bright. They were all three gifted and beautiful, but strikingly different from each other in size, in clothing, and in temperament. Beans, Osaida, was the first sister, the little one, so delicate that she could only crawl along the ground, twining around her big sisters for comfort and support. She dressed in all shades of green, from the palest green of the farthest twinkling stars to deepest, richest shades of green like the leaves of the oldest trees. Onayosha, Squash, the second sister, wore a dress of brilliant yellow. Days when the sun shone bright and hot in the sky, she loved to spread her green overskirts, protecting her sister's tender boots, and then run off by herself to the far ends of the field. O'Neill, Corn, the eldest, standing always straight and tall above the other sisters, guarded them faithfully, always there for them to lean on. She wore a light green shawl and had long yellow hair fluttering about her head in the breezes. There were many ways the sisters were different, but at least one way in which they were the same. They loved one another dearly and were never separated. If you asked, they would say, they could never live apart for long. One day, a stranger came to the field of the three sisters, a young boy of the Haudenosaunee, a child of the people of the Longhouse. He was as straight as an arrow, fearless as the eagle that circled the sky above his head, and knew the language of the birds and the five small brothers of the earth, fox, groundhog, squirrel, chipmunk, and shrew. The three sisters, the one who was just able to crawl, the one in the yellow dress, and the one with the flowing yellow hair, were very interested in this young man. They watched him fit an arrow in his bow, saw him carve a wooden bowl with his stone knife, and wondered where he went at sundown every night to sleep. Late in the summer of the first coming of the Haudenosaunee child to their field, one of the three sisters vanished. This was the youngest sister in green, the one who could only crawl. Her sisters mourned for her, but she did not return. The child of the Haudenosaunee came to the field of the three sisters again. He came to gather reeds at the edge of a stream to make arrow shafts. The two sisters who were left watched him and gazed with wonder at the trail of prints his moccasins left in the earth. Soon, the second of the sisters vanished, the one who was dressed in yellow and always wanted to run away. She left no trail of her going. It may have been that she set her feet in the moccasin tracks of that boy child. Now, there was but one of the sisters left. Tall and straight, she stood in the field, not once bowing her head with sorrow, but it seemed to her she could not live there without her beloved sisters. The days grew shorter and the nights colder. Her green shawl faded and grew thin and tattered. Her hair, once long and golden, was dry and tangled by the wind. Day and night, she sighed for her sisters to return, but they did not hear. Her voice, when she called to them, was low and plaintive like the wind. But one day, in the season of the harvest, the child of the Haudenosaunee heard the crying of the third sister left to mourn there in the field. He heard her sadness and, taking her in his arms, carried her to the longhouse of his mother and father. There, in the longhouse, she found her two lost sisters, safe and well, and very glad to see her. They had been curious about the child of the Haudenosaunee and had followed him home to see how and where he lived. They liked his warm longhouse so well, they decided now that winter was coming to stay, and they were doing all they could to be useful. The little sister in green, now quite grown up, was helping to feed the family. The sister in yellow sat on the shelf, drying herself, for she planned to fill the dinner pot later. The third sister joined them, ready to grind the meal for the child and his people. And so the three sisters were never separated again. Every spring, the people of the longhouse plant the three sisters together in a single mound, again and again across the fields where the sun shines brightest, to feed themselves and their children. The Haudenosaunee And the three sisters are excellent neighbors, a community caring for and nurturing each other with gratitude year after year across the generations.
Wow.
I love that story.
What a nice story. Bean, squash, and corn.
Yes.
Neato. That was wonderful.
I love it.
That was a really wonderful story.
Thank you, Sash.
Wow. Okay.
I have a little poem I could tell.
All right, if you want.
Do, unless you want to do something first.
Well, I was going to, I have another story about a music teacher.
Okay, a music teacher story, and then okay. I'll do some poems.
Well, and I have told this story on the radio before from a different angle, so I won't do all the details. But at the end of my freshman year in high school, my mother was very ill. My father was working two jobs, and there were a lot of hospital bills. My dad told me the day before my last day at school that I was going to have to transfer from a private Catholic school to a public school because of family expenses. So he asked me to go in and ask for my transcript and take it to the public school that afternoon. Well, I went in on Friday morning and went to see Brother Regis, who was the vice principal plus the secretary in those days. This is back in 1956. You know, they didn't have secretaries at my high school. It was a Catholic high school run by Christian Brothers. Anyway, I was asking for my transcripts, and the principal came out of his office and said, "Well, Brother Regis is getting your papers together. Here, run this note over to the band room for me, will you, please?" And he didn't say anything else to me, but he revealed later that he knew that I was taking accordion lessons, that I could read music, and he had sent this note in my hand, sent it over to the band director. I went over to the band room because I knew where it was because it was in a separate building just across the courtyard, and knocked on the door, went in. Mr. Eula, Felice Eula, who was our band director and music teacher at the school. He had played in a combo with Gene Krupa back in the 30s and 40s. And he was really an interesting person. Well, he looked at the note I gave him and said, "Just wait, I'll have an answer." And he wrote a little thing on the note. He said, "Here, hold on. I'll be right with you." He went into a closet, opened up the closet door, went in there and grabbed a small black box and handed it to me and said, "Here, you take this and the note and give it to Brother Gabriel, who was the principal." I said, "Okay, thank you." I started out the door, and as I was leaving, he said, "Have a good summer, Mr. Hobo." And I thought he said Mr. Hobo. And I walked out, and I thought, why was he calling me a hobo? You know, I wonder, that doesn't seem very nice. Anyway, I went to the office. Brother Gabriel was sitting there and talking to Brother Regis. I walked in, I handed him the box and the note, and he took the note, opened it up, looked at it, and he said, here, this is for you. Handed me the black box. And he said, "You don't have to leave school. You're going to be on scholarship. You're going to learn to play the oboe. We will pay for your lessons this summer at Freitag's Music Store on Charles Street. And you're going to be in the band and in the orchestra. And Mr. Eula has been after me for a long time that he would like to have an oboe player, but we haven't had anybody in the school play one. And now you're going to learn. And you're on scholarship, so you do not have to go to the public school." And I was incredibly grateful to Brother Gabriel and to Mr. Eula and to Mr. Freitag. I went every week to Freitag's music store and took music lessons and actually learned to play the oboe. It was a struggle because the first couple of weeks when I practiced at home at night. It was driving my father crazy, I know, because only thing I got out of the oboe was the sounds were not pleasant at all. It took me about 3 weeks before I could make a decent sound. And there was one time when my father came out of the kitchen, stood at the bottom of the steps, and yelled up the stairway to me on the third floor, which where my bedroom was, and yelled, "Stop, stop, for goodness sake, stop. I'll get another job so that you can go to school." And it was a big joke with us because he was proud of me for learning to play the oboe, and he attended a number of the concerts I played in all the way through high school, my sophomore, junior, and senior year. I was in the marching band. I was in a choir orchestra. And at our graduation, all the seniors who were in the orchestra, we sat with the orchestra, not up on stage with the rest of the graduates. And we were in our cap and gown, and the orchestra was all in their orchestral outfits. And we played with the orchestra. Our last performance was at our graduation. And I've always been very grateful to the Christian Brothers, especially Brother Gabriel, who died only about 10 years ago. Brother Gabriel was in his late 90s when he passed away, and he never wanted to lose a student. He would do anything possible to keep a student, including giving him a scholarship to play the oboe, which I was incredibly grateful for because I had lots of fun being in the band and got to do lots of neat things. And it influenced me later in life because of my experience as a member of the high school band.
I never heard of anyone having an oboe scholarship. What a wonderful story.
Isn't that wonderful? And here's an interesting adjunct. Terry Lee played the oboe in the high school band for a while also.
Wow.
Neither one of us became great oboe players, but we did play.
How did she get started?
Oh, she was always into music. Terry began playing the piano when she was very young. She's an incredibly accomplished piano player. She has performed lots of times, and she has played the piano for lots of events early in her career. She's also an accomplished harpist who had a wonderful career, played for hundreds and hundreds of weddings, played with an orchestra, had a combo, a trio, the Blue Leaf Trio, and she's retired from playing the harp now, but she still plays the piano every single day, and I get to benefit from her wonderful musicianship, and she plays lots of classical music, which I get to hear. So I get to hear Beethoven, Bach, and who's it? Mozart, and lots of others. She plays beautiful music, and I'm spoiled because I can sit in the living room and I can just sit here and enjoy her playing beautiful music. And
you
she's very grateful also.
You do lead a charmed life.
Oh, we do. We're blessed. It's almost like we have a magic lantern or something. And we have such good friends like you and Jose and John.
Oh. Well, I'm going to do a quick station ID again. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. Our theme today on November 6th, Monday, 2023, is gratitude and thanksgiving. That was a wonderful story, Stosh. You've had
Thank you.
Both of your music stories have been really charming and good to hear. Do you mind if I do a couple of poems?
Not at all. Go ahead. And I do have one more story, a short one. So.
Okay. Actually, I think I'll do a poem and a short little story.
Okay.
So starting with a poem I thought of you when when I found this poem. This is by the poet Joy Harjo. Perhaps the world ends here. The world begins at the kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared and set on the table. So it has been since creation, and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Babies teeth at the corner. They scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instructions on what it means to be human. We make men at it. We make women. At this table, we gossip. We call enemies and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down selves, and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is the place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table and have prepared our parents for burial here. Oh. At the table, we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing, crying, and eating of the last sweet bite.
That is lovely.
Yeah.
It sure is. Yeah.
Joy Harjo, former, what's that word for representative poet?
Oh, wow. Boy, that's very nice. It brings back good memories to me. Our kitchen table is very important.
Poet laureate.
Poet laureate. Thank you.
Poet laureate.
Station manager, John Case. Okay, I'm going to read a Dylan Thomas poem, and then I'm going to do a short little story.
Okay.
Unless you want to do one in between. Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas. Now, as I was young and easy under the apple boughs, above the lilting house and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry, time let me hail and golden in the heydays of his eyes. And honored among wagons, I was prince of the apple towns, and once below a time I lordly had the trees and leaves trail with daisies and barley down the rivers of the windfall light. And as I was green and carefree, famous among the barns, about the happy yard and singing as the farm was home, in the sun that is young once only, time let me play and be golden in the mercy of his means. And green and golden, I was huntsman and herdsman. The calves sang to my horn. The foxes on the hills barked clear and cold. And the Sabbath rang slowly in the pebbles of the holy streams. All the sun long it was running. It was lovely. The hay fields high as the house, the tunes from the chimneys. It was air and playing, lovely and watery and fire green as grass. And nightly, under the simple stars, as I rode to sleep, the owls were bearing the farm away. All the moon long I heard, blessed among stables, the nightjars flying with the ricks and the horses flashing into the dark. And then to awake, and the farm, like a wanderer, white with the dew, come back, the cock on his shoulder, it was all shiny, it was Adam and maiden. The sky gathered again, and the sun grew round that very day. So it must have been after the birth of the simple light in the first spinning place, the spellbound horses walking warm out of the whinnying green stable onto the fields of praise. And honored among foxes and pheasants by the gay house under the new-made clouds, and happy as the heart was long in the sun born over and over, I ran my heedless ways. My wishes raced through the house-high hay, and nothing I cared at my sky-blue trades that time allows in all his tuneful turning so few and such morning songs before the children, green and golden, follow him out of grace. Nothing I cared in the lamb-white days that time would take me up to the swallow-thronged loft by the shadow of my hand in the moon that is always rising, nor that riding to sleep I should hear him fly with the high fields and wake to the farm forever fled from the childless land. Oh, I was young and easy in the mercy of his needs. Time held me green and dying, though I sang in my chains like the sea.
Wow.
That poem makes me cry every time.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, my last gratitude story. The Tailor's Jacket. This is a Jewish folk tale. Very short.
I love it.
A poor tailor was once given a bolt of cloth by a rich customer. You must use this for yourself, said the customer. You deserve a fine coat for the winter. The tailor was overjoyed. He set to work at once. He measured and he cut. He measured and he cut. He sewed and he sewed. He sewed and he sewed. And he made himself a fine new coat. How the tailor loved that coat. He wore that coat. He wore that coat. He wore that coat until the coat was all worn out. The tailor could see that even though it was worn in places, there was still enough material to make a jacket. So he measured and he cut. He measured and he cut. He sewed and he sewed. He sewed and he sewed. And he made a jacket. The tailor was proud of his new jacket. He wore that jacket everywhere. He wore that jacket. He wore that jacket. He wore that jacket until it was all worn out. The tailor looked at the ragged jacket. He could see that even though it was worn in places, there was still enough material to make a vest. So he measured and he cut, measured and he cut. He sewed and he sewed. He sewed and he sewed. And he made a vest. The tailor was proud of his new vest. He wore that vest everywhere. He wore that vest. He wore that vest, he wore that vest until it was all worn out. The tailor turned the vest this way and that. He could see that even though it was worn in places, there was still enough material to make a cap. The tailor loved that cap. He wore that cap everywhere. He wore that cap, he wore that cap. He wore that cap until the cap was all worn out. The tailor turned that cap around and around. When he looked closely, he could see that even though it was worn in places, there was still just enough material left to make a button. So he measured and he cut. He measured and he cut. He sewed and he sewed. He sewed and he sewed and he made a button. The tailor was proud of that button. He wore that button everywhere. He wore that button. He wore that button. He wore that button until the button was all worn out. And the tailor was just about to throw the button away. But he looked at it closely and saw there was just enough material there to make a story. The end. I think we've lost Stash Silkowski. His image is frozen. There he is. You're back.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
You didn't hear the end of this. Of the.
Well, I know that story very well.
You know that story. Do you know that it ends with a story?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's several versions of it.
Right.
This is Margaret McDonald's version.
I have a great book that says a book of Jewish humor that I just lent to my brother, Tony. He has it now in his, where he lives. And it has, that's in that book. And I've used that a number of times.
I think I have that book.
Book of Jewish humor?
I do. But I didn't get that story from that.
Oh, okay.
From that book. I got it from.
And I might have gotten that from someplace else. I've gotten a lot of stories from that book. And sometimes I've given that book credit for stories that came from someplace else.
I think in the original version, it ends with that story ends with a button. The last thing the tailor makes.
Yes. And when I've told it on stage, I have said, and now, even though the button is gone, I give you the story.
That's right.
You know, and you can pass it on. So
it's
I have one more short one. I think we still have a few minutes. Okay.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. I'm torn. Let's see. Well, you know, I've done theater in 19.
Yes, sir.
Just about before the middle 80s, I decided to audition for a show. It was a spur of the moment thing. And I really wasn't sure how to audition for a real show. I had done some theater performances in school in teacher shows. Our drama director, who became a great friend of mine, Jay Butler, he would gather some teachers together and say, I'd like to do a show. I'd like to do a play. Anybody interested? And we would raise a hand and say, yeah, I'll help out. I'll do it. And he would say, okay. And he would go like this. Okay, we need the short, fat guy playing the police. You'll do that fine. And, you know, need a tall guy and somebody with a pretty face. And he would just pick people. And he knew us well enough because we were in the faculty room with talking to things that he figured we could do a good job. And so we did a number of shows, but we didn't have to audition because we were volunteers and he would help us out. And so I went and auditioned for this show called Man of La Mancha. And I had a number, you know, I'd fill out a form, and when it was my turn to go up on stage and sing, there were a bunch of people in the high school auditorium, a different high school than the one where I was teaching. And the lady at the piano looked, she later became a good friend of mine, but she looked with a kind of frown. She said, did you bring your music? And I said, oh, no, ma'am, I didn't know I was supposed to bring music. And she said, well, you're supposed to sing, right? I said, yes, but I didn't. And she said, well, what are you going to sing? I said, I was really flustered. All of a sudden, the man who was the director, a young man from England, he was in America on a one-year sabbatical. He came, came up on stage and came up to me and said, do you know the show? I said, yes, I've listened to the recording of the productions. And I saw the movie. He said, okay, here. And he flipped through a page in front of the piano player. She was amazed at this because he hadn't done anything like this before. And he pointed and he said, do you know this song? I said, oh, yeah, I recognize. He said, okay, good. And he asked her, he said, will you play? And we're going to sing together. And so he could guess I was nervous. Anyway, she began and we began singing. And we only sang a couple of lines, and he said, oh, well, you're fine. Okay, I'm going to go back and listen. would you start from the beginning again? And he left the stage. And so I did the song, and it turned out I got a part. And I was always really grateful to that guy. Instead of saying, you didn't come prepared, next, or something like that, you know, he could tell I was nervous and everything. And I think he liked the fact that I had a beard, and I would look good on stage with a beard. And he took a chance. And it turned out that I could sing. So, and I wound up having a solo in that show, which was absolutely mind-boggling and terrifying, because I had to sing Little Bird, which is a beautiful song and also a kind of a funny song. And I have a distinct memory that on opening night, I actually thought about running off stage behind the, you know, off the back of the stage through a door where they could open up the door, and it was auditorium at a big entrance. So you could actually drive a truck, you know, into the stage to deliver things and stuff. And the door was open, and I actually considered running out because I was scared to death I was going to mess up the song. But the man playing Don Quixote was standing behind me backstage. It was one of the few times during the whole show that we were both not on stage. And he put his hands on my shoulders and said, you're going to do a great job. Don't worry. Just do your best. And pushed me towards the curtain. And I went out, and I actually did a good job. I think the fear and the encouragement, I was very thankful to him that he did that. He could tell I was nervous. And anyway, he became a good friend. It's a shame that he died shortly, just a few years after that. His name was Barclay Brown, and he was a minister, and he actually counseled me in some ways, and it was a really nice guy. And one last thing I'm really grateful for, one thing I'm really grateful for is my father's advice. My dad gave me great advice all the time, but one of the things he told me is always compliment a lady on their hair. And that advice in 1995, when I met Terry Lee, and we had auditioned for a show, and I didn't even remember her name, but I remember her audition. She had a beautiful voice. I went to the very first rehearsal. We were both cast in the show, and as I was walking to the rehearsal that was going to be at a small church, she was standing outside waiting to go into the, I guess, a side door. And as I walked up, I remembered, oh, her hair looks so different. And it looks nice. And I said, hi, boy, I like your hair. You got a cut. It looks really nice. And she smiled, and we became friends, and we've been married now for over 25 years. And I always think, thanks, Dad. What great advice. Because me complimenting her on her hair, it kind of broke the, you know, the mystery between us, and we became friends. And about 5 or 6 months later, we began dating, and the rest is history, which was still going on.
Oh my! Okay, what a good story. I think I have time for one more poem, actually.
All right.
You think?
I think so.
Okay. This is For 5,000 Years by Matthew Johnson. For 5,000 years or more than 15,000 generations, human beings have been invoking spiritual power. My predecessors and yours have gathered together to make sense of their lives and their place in the cosmos. And they have spoken aloud and invited what they conceived as sacred and powerful to be with them. They called upon the spirits of air and earth, fire and water. They called the bear and deer, They asked for the raven to protect them. They pleaded for the heroes of old to slay the monsters of their fears. They sang songs they learned from their grandparents and moved in the appointed ways or in ways that were new but felt like the right thing to do. And they imputed power to these spirits and to the memories of those heroes. They called them gods. And they were invoked. Vishnu and Kali, Elohim, Odin, and 100 million others. Every group of people everywhere. They gathered to make sense of their lives and to make sense of their place in the cosmos. And they called these spirits to be present to them. And so do we. So do we. We gather today to make sense of ourselves and this universe in which we live as best we are able. And we call ourselves to worship together, and we invoke the power and wonder of life itself, that to which all those spirits of animals and memories of heroes pointed the way. We invoke that power, which is, we know, always around, always with us, but which we sometimes forget. We forget that we are part of the whole of creation. We forget that we are stardust. We forget that we are capable of miracles, first among them, that we can love. We forget these things. So we invoke the power of existence so that we can remember, so we can lift our eyes and open our ears to the true and beautiful. For 5,000 years or more, we have done this. In many tongues, in many ways, we have done this. And so we continue that ancient tradition in our own way and in our own time. And so let us now sing in gratitude together.
Wow. Nice.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is.
He's an archaeologist.
Right. Nice. Absolutely. Yeah. That was really nice. Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Zielkowski.
Broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, Bolivar, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. At the Enlightened Storytelling Hour, we invite our listeners to share stories in their communities, encouraging all of us to tell more stories, share more stories, and celebrate each other. Stay tuned. For
it's Country Music Day on Enlightened Radio, and we were in the middle of a Judd's reunion before this show started, so I suppose we'll continue on.
All right. Sounds great.
I don't know, but I include in my country music, there's going to be other countries that we're going to try to listen to, too, besides, because every country, it turns out, has a country music.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Anyway. Obviously, every place where there's cattle ranching, for example, has very similar tunes. I mean, it all sounds like horses running. So
just recently, I heard somebody say, over here, where this is from some person out in the West, I think, they play all kinds of music. They play both country and Western. And that was the whole statement.
Yeah, right.
It's like all kinds of music.
That's a country. That's a country music joke, actually. But yeah, okay.
Right. Well, I figures. The country music awards are coming up, and I can't wait to see them. I don't usually watch them, but. Peyton Manning is one of the hosts.
Well, that's good. That's good.